The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.
Ireland is becoming somewhat of an outlier across Europe as far-right parties begin to make gains across the continent. Focus on their continuing rise over the next couple of weeks will be trained on both Austria and Germany, because Austria's far-right Freedom Party is currently leading efforts to form a government. And next month, Germany will go to the polls with Alternative für Deutschland, the AfD, running in second place. Now, to talk about the rise of the far-right and its impact in those countries and right across the EU, we're joined from Paris by Jean-Yves Camus, political analyst and associate research fellow at the French Institute for International and Strategic Affairs. Jean-Yves, good morning and welcome.
Good morning.
Now, first of all, what's going on in Austria is interesting because the president has already asked the leader of this party to form a government, a coalition government, but he will be chancellor.
He will be chancellor, and that will be the first time since 1945 that a far-right, some say extreme-right, political leader will lead the government. The FPÖ actually has already been part of several coalitions, including with the Socialist Party in the 1980s, with the Conservatives after 1999, but as vice-chancellor and with several key posts in the cabinet, but not as prime minister. The FPÖ actually came ahead of the Conservatives in the last legislative election, which was held in 2024. So it's, I would say, it's a normal choice from President van der Bellen to say Herbert Kickl will be the next chancellor.
Now, the FPÖ, which is Freiheitliche Partei Österreich, it's called in English the Freedom Party, it has its origins in the Nazis, though, does it not?
In fact, it happened as follows. Until 1949, members of the Nazi Party in Austria, those who had not been important collaborationists but had been members of the Nazi Party, were stripped of the right to vote. So in 1949, when the new constitution was enacted, and those people got back their right to vote, there was a need for a party that would accommodate their needs. And it was the it was not named the FPÖ, it was the Union of Independence. And the Union of Independence in 1956 became the FPÖ. It was the home to most of the former members of the Nazi Party. But there were two very different political factions within the FPÖ. One was free market, liberal, and the other one was nationalist far right. And in 1986, a man whose name was Jörg Haider took the leadership of the FPÖ and transformed it into a really radical pan-Germanist, nationalist, anti-EU party. With some success until today.
Now, what is the appeal for people in Austria today of a party that is substantially anti-EU in the way the EU is run, and also apparently somewhat pro-Russia?
The story is the same in many countries in Europe. The economy in Austria is not in very good shape. Unemployment is rising. Competition from neighboring countries who are outside of the EU is very strong. So most people also get fed up with those coalitions, which always include Christian conservatives and the social democrats. It's almost like in Germany, you know, when you have those wide coalitions encompassing both the conservatives and the social democrats, most of the time, a significant number of people look for an alternative, and the alternative is the FPÖ. And besides, I mean, the Austria used to be a neutral country during the Cold War, and now many Austrians do not want to get involved in the war in the Ukraine. They want to stay away from any further involvement of the EU in the war. It's some kind of a naturalistic approach to politics, and only the FPÖ says This war should stop, with negotiations opening right now between Moscow and Kiev.
Now, the question of neutrality, and as you mentioned there, Austria used to be neutral. I mean, it is possible to be neutral within the EU because Ireland's official stance is one of neutrality. In helping out Ukraine, for example, we were prohibited by our neutrality from supplying any weaponry at all to Ukraine. Rather, we could help them with things like detecting mines or with uniforms, things like that, but no weaponry whatsoever because we're neutral.
Well, I mean, yes, it's very difficult when you are Austria because you're so close to where the war takes place. Austria has always been, at the time of the Cold War, a place where many connections were made between East and West. The influence of Russia is important. Mm. In fact, several oligarchs close to Putin have transferred their business to Vienna. So it's a very specific place. I mean, when you are neutral and you are Ireland, you're far away from where the war takes place. And of course, there's a debate, but you can, I mean, be neutral without any big controversy. In Austria, it's much more difficult.
So it would compare, for example, what Lisbon was like during the Second World War, where diplomats and others from both Germany and from the Allied countries would actually come across each other and even make contact.
Yes. The story goes that Vienna during the Cold War was a city of spies, and to some extent it still is. You also need to remind that the international organization taking care of nuclear weapons is located in Vienna. So you have Iranians, you have Saudi Arabians, you have, of course, people from the US, from Russia, many Chinese. It's really a place where diplomacy, underground diplomacy, is very strong and where spying is very strong.
Now, is there any suggestion that someone like Elon Musk will have an influence on Austrian elections in the way he is determined to have an influence on the success of Alternative for Deutschland in Germany?
Yes, probably he will have some influence because X, formerly Twitter, is his own company, so he can boost any content that goes in support of the FPO. And what is much more worrying is that Musk's influence on X goes in the same way as Russian attempts to destabilize and boost contents on social networks in favor of far-right parties. So I would say Russian influence and Musk influence, they really two very dangerous things that can happen both in Austria and in Germany with the next general election taking place at the end of February.
Now, in Austria, there will be a chancellor from the so-called Freedom Party. In Germany, it is probably a bit of a stretch to suggest there could be in the short term a chancellor from AfD.
Yes, because of the very specific history of Germany, of course, when the average German thinks of the AfD or the extreme right, that he always had in mind National Socialism and the Nazi regime. So at this time, the AfD gets 21% in the polls against 29-30% for the mainstream conservative party, the CDU, and it seems to me it is still impossible because of this very specific historical context that tomorrow the conservatives will say, okay, we need a coalition partner, so we'll go to the AfD in Russian agreement.
Finally, Jean-Yves, I should ask you whether you think that the EU can renew itself, because a lot of the criticism is maybe the pretty ponderous way the EU is run and rules and regulations. Can the EU reinvigorate itself and move away from its critics?
If the EU wants to reinvigorate itself, it needs to have a narrative. If you ask your average fellow Irish, or if I ask my fellow French, do you think you are European or you are French? They will say I'm French. There's no narrative except that we need to expand the EU further and further, and that the EU brought peace to Europe after 1945, which is partly false because of the war in Yugoslavia. So there's no narrative at this time that can, I would say, surpass the national narrative. The EU has not succeeded in doing that.
All right. Jean-Yves Camus, political analyst and associate research fellow at the French Institute for International and Strategic Affairs. Thank you very much for joining us.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.